This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. This week, national politics bled over into state politics. The Illinois State Board of Elections voted unanimously to allow former President Donald Trump to stay on next month's primary ballot. That's despite the hopes of a group of voters who filed an objection aiming to boot him from the ballot. With us to walk through what happened as part of our Friday political roundtable is Theodora Koulavaris. She's state capitol reporter in Springfield for WCIA-TV, the CBS station serving central Illinois. She's been covering the Board of Elections in the past few days. Theodora, welcome to the 21st Show for the first time. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So the objection from voters to Trump being on the ballot, it came early last month. It was 87 pages long. I guess as succinctly as you can, how would you describe their arguments?
So the basis of their argument falls on Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And that amendment says if you've taken an oath to uphold the Constitution and you have engaged in insurrection, that you cannot hold office again. And the reasoning for their argument, they point directly to Donald Trump's involvement in the January 6th attack on the Capitol as sort of the basis for that objection.
And I will just point listeners, a couple of weeks ago, we spoke with a law professor about that very part of the Constitution, if you want to go deeper on that. So what, but for the purposes of our conversation, we're talking about the State Board of Elections case here. What sort of reactions did you hear from across the political spectrum to this challenge?
Well, one of the things I heard, at least from the Illinois Republican Party, is that they said this should be up to the voters to decide if he should be on the if he should be the nominee, not necessarily the courts to decide this. One of the things I heard from the Illinois State Board of Elections in covering all of this was that they typically don't deal with arguments or objections related to constitutional issues. Most of the things they deal with has to do if there's issues with someone's nominating petition. So when they file, if maybe they didn't get enough signatures on their petition, or if they didn't provide proper documentation when they were filing. So anything related to the Illinois Election Code, not necessarily something that pertains to the U.S. Constitution.
All right. So the Board of Elections heard arguments on the objection last week. How did that play out? What were your takeaways from that?
So from last week's hearing, the lawyers representing the objectors kind of reiterated their stance that they believed, you know, Donald Trump engaged in an insurrection on January 6th, pointing to a lot of different events that unfolded that day. Trump's lawyers, on the other hand, made their case before the hearing officer, saying, we don't believe he engaged in insurrection, kind of looking at saying there isn't a clear definition for what it means to have engaged in insurrection, and also saying that Donald Trump called on people that were there that day to peacefully protest at the Capitol to not engage in violence. So the whole argument that they had tried to make is saying that he did not incite them to take any sort of violent actions that day.
All right. So I already mentioned, spoilered, the so to speak, the outcome of this. The board did vote unanimously that President Trump could remain on the ballot. But even though it voted that way, at least one member of the board expressed some pretty strong thoughts on Trump. What did she have to say?
So it was Republican board member Catherine McCrory. She said everyone was going down the line saying how they were going to vote. Before she cast her vote, she said, I believe he did engage in an insurrection, and at least that his actions do amount to an insurrection. But because, again, the board does not have the authority, at least, to rule on constitutional issues, that's why she decided to vote to overrule the objection and essentially keep Trump on the ballot. So again, I didn't hear anything that day from any of the other board members. So I thought it was very interesting that she made a point to come out and say something right before she cast her vote.
And I'm sorry, you might have already said this, but it is interesting. The board is even though Illinois is now a majority sort of Democratic state, it is evenly split between Democrats and Republicans, right?
Yeah, so it's a 4 Democrats, 4 Republicans split, and they all voted unanimously on this issue to keep him on the ballot.
Yeah, so Illinois is not the only state where people are trying different tactics to invoke the 14th Amendment to have President Trump taken off the ballot. How does this fit into the bigger national picture?
So right now, one of the things, at least in particular to Illinois, after the State Board of Elections or the 8-member board made their decision, the group of objectors took their case now to the courts, filing a petition within the circuit, the Cook County court system, asking the courts to have an expedited, to take this as an expedited process, mainly because early voting starts February 8th in Illinois. That's when voters are going to start casting their votes for who they want to be the presidential nominee for their party. And also that's when local election authorities start sending out the vote by mail ballots. So they're asking there for kind of an expedited ruling, but also the Illinois, they said in their petition that they believe the Illinois Supreme Court, which has a Democratic majority, that they will possibly have to step in and make some sort of decision on this. But February 8th, because it's the day of, it's the start of early voting, it also happens to be the day the US Supreme Court is going to hear the case from Colorado, where their Supreme Court kind of made a similar ruling saying that they believe Donald Trump is disqualified from the ballot, kind of based on the similar challenges that the group of Illinois voters brought here to say that Trump was disqualified. So a lot of this is all still kind of playing out within the court system, even though voters will start voting February 8th in the early voting and vote by mail.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of this is going to hinge on what the U.S. Supreme Court does in that Colorado case.
Yes, and that was something when I talked to the Illinois State Board of Elections, that was something they made clear too, that, you know, even if this goes to the court system, which it now is, anything that the U.S. Supreme Court might rule on could supersede anything that the Illinois Supreme Court decides.
Yeah. So, okay. So I guess it's just a wait and see in terms of the Illinois courts to what they're going to do with this. More generally, what else are you watching for as we're getting into, as you said, early voting is coming right up next week.
So basically, I'm kind of just following, you know, kind of going forward what the U.S. Supreme Court is going to be kind of hearing, those oral arguments on February 8th, but also if there's any other challenges that pop up from any other states. Again, they're going to be ruling on the Colorado case, but also we've seen a case in Maine to kind of attempt to take Donald Trump off the ballot. So again, kind of just following if there's anything that happens in the other states, but also kind of just keeping track of anything that happens at the court levels, the state courts here in Illinois, with the kind of objection that we've seen here.
Yeah. All right. Well, it is something we will certainly keep an eye on as well. Theodora Koulavaris is state capitol reporter with WCIA-TV. Thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us on the 21st show.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
It's the 21st show. While we have been talking about national politics so far, although in the context of state government, we are going to now turn our attention to what's actually been happening in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. And with us for that, as always, is Linda Kenyon, who covers the Congress and the federal government for Illinois Public Media. Linda, good to talk with you again.
Well, I'm happy to be here, Brian. Thank you.
So I want to begin talking about Ukraine and border security, two issues linked, as we've talked about, by Republicans who said they weren't going to do one without the other. And I guess I should note for listeners, these issues are moving fast in Washington. Linda and I spoke Thursday evening. But when we've talked about this before, we talked about there were still obstacles coming up. What is the latest with this? What seems to be holding things up there?
Well, the Ukraine border bill, the Ukraine aid, I should say, is linked to the border bill. And while there has been some discussion about delinking the two, it is all part of an emergency supplemental funding request. And the White House has said repeatedly that it wants this bill to be taken as a whole, not in individual parts. And the individual parts are all important. It's aid for Ukraine. It's aid for Israel. It's aid for the Indo-Pacific region, which is facing threats from China. And it is U.S. border security. But it is the border security component that seems to be getting the most pushback, because Republicans in the House have demanded that there be more funding for border security. The president put funding for border security in there, but the Republicans have rejected it for a number of reasons, one of which may be sheer politics. Another is that they're saying they want more than just money for border security. They want policy changes, overall immigration reform, which is a very tough nut to crack in Washington, and it has not been cracked for several administrations. So the House Republicans, most specifically the conservative members of the House Republican Party, are saying it's you know, we want more and we're not going to take less, and we're not going to deal with security abroad until we deal with security here at home. So a bipartisan committee in the Senate, sort of an unofficial working group, has been coming up with some ideas, and they say they have a bill that they're going to put on the floor in the Senate as soon as next week. In fact, the text is going to be released on this over this weekend, and then they'll start the procedural process, because the Senate has a lot of sort of arcane procedures they have to follow, and they'll start that on Monday. And that will be able to, they'll be able to see the bill come to fruition, final passage most likely, because it does have bipartisan support in the Senate, in the next week or two. So we'll see how that works out. But some members of the House, who, including the most conservative members, haven't seen the text of the bill yet. They already say they're going to oppose it.
You know, I heard a commentator invoking an old Saturday Night Live sketch from during the Obama administration, and it involved then Vice President Biden, who was talking with Republicans and basically said, you know what, send me a blank stack of paper with the word healthcare on the front and I'll sign it. And I kind of feel that Democrats may feel that way somewhat about the immigration issue. Is there any way you think Republicans would take yes for an answer? Because we've heard the former president basically urging them to say, I'd rather have the political issue to campaign on. Don't give Biden and the Democrats a win on this.
Well, the person who has been most vocal about that has been former President Trump, who has basically said to his supporters on Capitol Hill, the Republican conservatives, he has said, don't give Biden a win. If you keep this situation alive, I can take the win when I'm reelected as president of the United States. And so House Speaker Mike Johnson was asked that very question, because he has been counseling with the former president. He has said he did go to Mar-a-Lago. He did talk to the former president about this issue. And he was asked at a press conference this week, is it true that you're just kind of saying no to everything and essentially, as you put it, not taking yes for an answer because you're doing the bidding of the former president? And he said, that's absurd. Of course, I wouldn't do that. I'm not doing that. How can you say that? And so, however, it does appear that, you know, that is a certain degree of what's going on, as the House conservatives are very much convinced that Donald Trump will be the next president, and they want to get on his good side.
What happens, coming back since we began this by talking about aid to Ukraine, what happens if that doesn't get passed? Is there any way around this?
Well, most likely they would have to come up with a separate bill, and it would be very hard to kind of drag that across the finish line if it's not attached to must-pass pieces of legislation. And that could happen. But the important thing to realize if they go that route is that it's going to take a much longer amount of time that Ukraine doesn't have. Now, today, the European Union voted to give Ukraine some $50 billion in aid. This is economic aid. This is to help prop up Ukraine's ailing, war-torn economy. This is not arms and munitions. In other words, not a security package. And so the Ukrainian people still are saying, and certainly the Ukrainian president is saying, look, you know, we still need help from the United States, even though the European Union has provided much-needed help, for which they are extremely grateful. President Biden actually earlier in the week praised the European Union for passing that $50 billion in aid. And, of course, as part of his supplemental bill, his emergency request, he's requested $60 billion for Ukraine for arms and munitions to help in its fight against Russia. So, you know, any delay is going to make it that much harder. Because right now what they're doing is they are having to ration their bullets. That's what the White House National Security Council spokesman told us this week.
Coming to the end of our time together, just about two and a half minutes left, the House did manage to pass some legislation around taxes on Wednesday night. It happened on a bipartisan basis, which is not something we see all that often, at least with significant legislation. What would that do? What is getting it the support that it seemed to have?
Well, it was kind of a situation where a lot of folks on both sides of the aisle actually weren't too happy with it, but they sort of held their nose and voted for it, to be honest. There was, and contained in that tax bill was a restoration of the child tax credit, but at a smaller level and with some restrictions. And there was also more taxes, more corporate taxes, tax cuts, I should say, not actual imposing of new taxes, but tax cuts for wealthy corporations, which is exactly what the Democrats and President Biden say they don't want. They feel that there is an inequity. In fact, Rosa DeLauro, who is the chief ranking Democrat on the committee that produced this bill, said that there is racial inequity and there is financial inequity all wrapped up in one, and that corporations don't need more tax cuts, that the actual, you know, average person needs the tax cuts. So, you know, while there was a lot of opposition, you can see by the final tally, more support than opposition, and a case for some Republicans and for some Democrats where they went ahead and, as I say, had to sort of hold their nose and vote for it.
Linda Kenyon, thank you so much, as always.
Thank you.
Linda Kenyon covers Washington, D.C., the Illinois Congressional Delegation for Illinois Public Media. She joined us today from the White House. Let us know what you think about what we've been talking about. Our email address, talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. Coming up after the break, a preview of Black History Month events around Illinois. This is the 21st Show. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.